From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
San Mateo.
Sunnyvale.
Excelsior District of San Francisco.
Financial District.
Coming up, we'll meet a man with the nickname Wall Street who became a personal finance expert from behind bars.
They say that our names was usually a tag of who we are and what we've done in the past, and so this new me and what I'm into with finances, I think Wall Street kind of fit perfectly with the reinvented.
Then we'll see how Oakland's community policing strategy has worked out 15 years on.
To say that today was different than before is not true.
And we'll hear stories from a psychiatrist at San Quentin Prison.
He said, "Do you want to know why that inmate was here?" I said, "Yeah, all right, tell me." He said, "That inmate killed a doctor."
We're looking at life from both sides of prison bars with our guest co-host Nancy Mullane, author of Life After Murder, on this special hour-long edition of Cross Currents. More than 2 million people are incarcerated in our country, the largest prison population in the world. In the 1980s and 90s, California was at the center of a push to get tough on crime, trying juveniles as adults, passing three strikes, and tightening sentencing laws as part of the war on drugs.
Drugs are menacing our society. They're threatening our values and undercutting our institutions. They're killing our children.
Between 1980 and 2011, California's prison population grew 640%. In 2011, the U.S. Supreme Court decided the state's prisons were dangerously overcrowded, and they ordered the Golden State to reduce the population.
It was a 5-4 decision written by Justice Anthony Kennedy, who joined the court's four liberals in saying the drastic remedy was necessary because the overcrowding was causing needless suffering and death.
California still incarcerates more than 130,000 adults. But beyond those statistics and headlines, what do we really know about those living, sometimes for decades, inside the walls of California's 34 adult prison facilities? Today, we're launching the San Quentin Prison Report, a new series that brings you stories produced by men currently serving time in California's oldest prison. You'll hear firsthand how these men manage the various obstacles that are part of prison life.
The San Quentin Prison Report.
SQPR is a media collective of prisoners and volunteers from the community working together to give voice to personal growth, social transformation, and restorative justice.
SQPR.
Our mission is to create documentaries, films, and audio programs that broaden and challenge the conversation around crime, punishment, and rehabilitation in the United States.
Our first story is about a young man who grew up homeless. He ended up in prison by age 17 and didn't learn to read until his 20s. But here's the thing. After he learned to read, what grabbed him was the business section of newspapers and financial publications. And in a relatively short amount of time, he gained a unique understanding of the stock market and personal finance. This is the story of Curtis Carroll, who is aptly nicknamed Wall Street. From San Quentin, Tommy Shakur Ross has that story.
Curtis Carroll is 34 years old, but he looks about 25. He's clean cut, wearing dark shades and a gray baseball cap turned backwards. It's hard to imagine that he was homeless as a kid.
My mother was a drug addict for many, many years, and we moved from place to place a lot. She used crack cocaine for a long time since I was a kid. So we got evicted, you know, out of our various homes that we lived in. And, you know, we lived in missions and, you know, Christian homes and churches and things like that for a while. I mean, basically, we was homeless.
And this affected his school life. He was kicked out of schools in both Oakland and Richmond. Perhaps he didn't learn to read because he would pay other students to do his homework and tests for him. In 1996, at age 17, he was arrested for murder.
I remember I went to court, and my lawyer was telling me about the case, and he had gave me a bunch of papers to read. And he pretty much was explaining everything to me, and I was kind of just like nodding my head like, yeah, I understand, but I really didn't. I thought, well, the tricks and things that I've used through the years to get people to do what I want them to do didn't work in this particular environment.
He was sentenced to 54 years of life and eventually ended up here at San Quentin. One day, while seeking out the sports page so that the cellmate could read it to him, he stumbled across the business section of the paper.
And I was like, what's that? He said, that's that paper in your hand. And I said, stocks? Well, what do you mean? And he kind of just, he said, yeah, you know, this is a place where you can go Wall Street. You know, you can go and you can invest in stocks and you can make money. And I'm like, really? Can I do that from here? He said, yeah, you can do it from anywhere. And that's what sparked it. And that was the, so okay, let me, you know, see a little bit more about how this process works.
That spark lit a fire for young Curtis. He was assigned a tutor that provided him with Star Wars books to read. But it was the financial information that motivated him to learn.
I guess I was probably about 19. And when I started to learn how to read, financial publications was what I was reading. You know, I was reading the business sections of the newspaper. And so though I was still educating myself and trying to get my reading skills up, because I was reading about finance, it was kind of opening my eyes to what the world had to offer, you know, from a different perspective from the way I've always seen it.
And people started seeing him differently, too. In fact, he's become such a financial wizard that now everyone calls him Wall Street.
The name Wall Street was given to me by a brother that I met some years ago who was in one of the classes that I was teaching. Kind of defined the new me. They say that our names are usually a tag of who we are and what we've done in the past. And so this new me and what I'm into with finances, I think Wall Street kind of fit perfectly with that, you know, with the reinvented.
The name of this course is called FEEL. And it's an acronym that stands for Financial Empowerment Emotional Literacy.
Wall Street became such an expert in finance that prisoners began asking him to teach them. And now he teaches a class about personal finance and stock investing under the Financial Literacy Division of SQPR.
In prison, you can buy stocks three ways. You can buy stocks what they call direct investment purchase, which is considered a DRIP program that allows you to write the company directly. Then you have the other process, which is called going through an online discount brokerage. Then you have the way where you have your folks in the streets have you go through an actual brokerage where the broker does the work for you.
The curriculum he teaches is based on what he calls the four timeless rules to personal finance.
Saving, cost control, borrowing prudently, and diversification.
He provides a practical example for prisoners.
So saving would be, you know, a person in here who is not spending all his money at the canteen. You know, cost control would be a person who says that, you know, I have $100 and I'm only going to go spend 50 this month and I'm going to save 50. Borrowing prudently means that you know you have the money before you borrow it versus what someone else is going to give you. And diversification is allowing your money to do multiple functions. So instead of you, for example, if you was working in PIA.
PIA stands for Prison Industry Authority. It's a place where some prisoners work various jobs like making furniture, upholstery, mattress and bedding, while earning wages from a scale of 30 to 95 cents with an average of about 75 cents an hour.
And you was making money and getting a check, and then you was a drawer, and you draw cards and you sold cards on the side. That's diversification, because not only are you getting a paycheck from PIA, you're also getting a check. You're also making money off the cards that you're doing from the drawings.
Today, Wall Street has a new perspective on criminality, thanks to its newfound knowledge about how the financial system works.
For me, being a criminal and always having a criminal mentality about how to make money, financial education took that out of me, because criminality no longer made sense anymore. It was like, now that I'm seeing it from a financial perspective, I'm now weighing my options about what's worth it. It economically don't make sense no more to break the law.
That's quite a revelation for someone who once considered himself a criminal. Wall Street says he has a new outlook on life, but it's not about greed.
I don't worship money. I don't worship money, and I don't love money. But what money does for me is it's a necessity to allow me to do the things that I've been striving to do in life, as far as change, helping others, and things like that.
He insists that financial education is basically understanding how to manage money properly and how to make it work in a person's life.
We never really lose where we come from. We just learn to morph into something else. But if you're out there and don't have a way to produce, you tend to go back to what you know. And to get rid of that totally, like I have, you educate yourself on finances, and you never have to worry about that again. And so that's just what I really want to get out there to the people.
Word up, Wall Street. Keep hope alive. This is Tommy Shakur Ross with the San Quentin Prison Report. I'm out.
The San Quentin Prison Report brings you stories produced by inmates from behind prison walls. Next week, one SQPR reporter tells us about the first time he broke down in tears after finding out he was denied parole.
I attempted to hide any evidence of my perceived weakness. I turned, faced the wall, and tried to hide as I used my T-shirt to wipe the tears away. I thought, perhaps I could make it back to the cell before anyone noticed.
That's next Monday on the San Quentin Prison Report.
The San Quentin Prison Report Radio is produced by founding director Troy Williams and executive coordinator Nigel Poor. The SQPR Radio production team includes managing editor Tommy Shakur Ross, reporters Sha Wallace Stepter, Greg Esrich, and production assistant Shireen Garcia. SQPR is made possible by the support of Warden Kevin Chappelle, Public Information Officer Lieutenant Sam Robinson, TV Specialist Larry Schneider, and KALW News Director Holly Kernan.
You can find out more about the San Quentin Prison Report at kalw.org. We'll have more stories every Monday on Cross Currents. And I want to also thank Mark Jeffries at Avid for donating Pro Tools for the guys inside of San Quentin. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan, and I'm joined by reporter Nancy Mullane. And Nancy's reported many stories from inside of San Quentin for Cross Currents and for NPR. And for her new podcast, Life of the Law, she's executive director of that, and she joins us now in studio. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Holly. Good to be here.
So I was really moved to hear Tommy Ross's story about Curtis Carroll and Wall Street, and it was really revelatory to, you know, give. Curtis Carroll was talking about getting a new perspective on criminality, and I feel like these guys and their reports are giving me a new perspective on life behind bars, whereas we oftentimes in the general public have this kind of monolithic view of who are these men in prisons, or we don't even think about it. We've kind of locked them away and thrown away the key. You, Nancy Mullane, are the one who got me involved in this radio project in the first place. And one of the things that I've heard repeatedly from people inside of San Quentin is that this institution is really different because there are so many volunteers from the outside that come in, and it creates this atmosphere that's really different than other places inside of the prison system. Is that your experience?
Yeah. You know, I think San Quentin, because it's located so close to an urban environment, the Bay Area, how many universities and law schools. And many of those law schools and universities ask that their undergraduates and law students who are in criminal justice programs visit a prison as part of their programming. And so for many students, it's going behind the walls of San Quentin as a visitor on a tour. Which I've joined many tours to kind of witness this transformation that people experience when they go with the public information officer, Sam Robinson, through those east gates and walk down the long entry drive and then through the thick walls that take them behind the walls where the inmates live. And it's a before and after experience, not just for reporters, but for visitors. And I think because San Quentin is so close to all of this university and this transformative experience, the walls of that prison tend to disappear.
And that's one of the things that we're trying to do here at KALW, your local public radio station, is break down some of those walls, visible and invisible, that exist, and really try to explore what is life like in this little corner of the world. And that includes going into places like San Quentin and asking inmates to produce these stories and bringing them to broadcast so that we can all have these new perspectives. And I want to remind people that we're in our fall membership campaign here at KALW. We're keeping it short and sweet. We are small but mighty, humble but mighty public radio. And if you want to support this kind of public radio, please go to klw.org. You can donate at any level that's comfortable for you. You can also give us a call.
1-800-525-9917. And I do have to say, you know, I've been working with KLW for years, and I just never really thought about becoming a member because I thought, well, I'm working there. But do you know in the last fund drive, I became a member
of KALW? If Nancy can do it, you can do it. 1-800-525-9917. We've promised to keep these breaks very, very short, but that only works if you step up and do your part. This is community radio. 1-800-525-9917 or go online to klw.org. You just click on donate now. You can see all of the thank you gifts. We're not going to take time out of the program to tell you about that because this is an adult, respectful relationship. KALW.org. Or go to the phone.
1-800-525-9917. And, you know, listening to that report on Wall Street, I've met Wall Street many times going inside. And what an interesting individual. You know, oftentimes when I do a story on San Quentin or any other prison, I go in to capture sound. I go in to interview. But when I was I assisted in bringing professional reporters and producers in to meet with the men in the San Quentin Prison Report, to teach them, to give them some of the skills. And Wall Street, I just got to sit and watch him. And he has this little desk. It's not very big. It's like a school desk. And he sits and he keeps these long lists of stocks. And he's just so disciplined. And just meeting these individuals inside and how devoted they are to change and to becoming a better person. And when he describes having that alternative, he now really believes, you know, in an alternative life where he can actually survive and support himself.
And he says in that piece, criminality no longer makes sense to me.
Mm.
Yeah, I just loved getting to hear from him. And we've got we're going to bring you lots more stories every Monday produced by the men inside of San Quentin telling their own stories.
It's a fascinating
using
project.
This beautiful medium. We're going to go back to more stories from Cross Currents, but you can go to KALW.org and become a member of this community institution that tries to bridge these gaps and break down these walls and let us get to know each other. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Cross Currents, and now we're going to go back to another story in this special hour-long edition of Cross Currents. We're going to go now from San Quentin to Oakland, where we'll meet Alex Miller Cole. He's lived in West Oakland for 13 years. For the last five, he says he and his husband frequently called the police to report things like prostitution and gunshots. But more often than not,
they would not fix anything.
So the couple came up with their own way to deal with the problem.
We started to get to know our neighbors and get a little bit more involved with their lives. And then all of a sudden you know why a prostitute is a prostitute. And then you can do really something about it. You know why the boy is selling drugs in the corner. And then you can maybe try to influence their lives differently.
Miller Cole doesn't think what he's doing is that radical. He just doesn't think he should be the only one doing it. To him, it's what police officers are supposed to do.
If our police beat cops came to my door and said, "Hi, Officer Kim, how are you? How are you, sir? Hey, call me if you need anything. Next door. Oh, you got three kids? Great. Okay, thank you." That's community policing, and that you know the face of these guys, you will feel so much more comfortable with them.
Community policing has been the official philosophy of the Oakland Police Department since 1996. Rather than officers simply responding to crime after it happens, city leaders embrace the idea of preventing crime from happening in the first place by putting police on the streets even when there's not an emergency. An official philosophy, though, isn't always the same as what's actually happening. KALW's Kyungjin Lee reports on Oakland's ongoing community policing efforts.
Back in the mid-90s, the city of Oakland created 57 neighborhood beats to help build relationships among community institutions, residents, and a designated police officer. In each one, city-funded coordinators managed neighborhood crime prevention councils, or NCPCs. Regular council meetings brought everyone together to work out local crime issues. Jose Dorado lives in East Oakland's Maxwell Park neighborhood and took to the idea right away.
It's in my view, very clear that it takes neighborhood action to improve the health and safety of a neighborhood. The idea of not only a neighborhood coming together, but also coming together as a partner with OPD and the city to address these sorts of problems makes perfect sense to me.
Each neighborhood council figured out the top three issues they wanted their community police officer to work on. But already there was a problem. Those community officers were hard to come by. Chronic understaffing of the Oakland Police Department was an issue even back then, and officers resisted what they saw as social work.
You're completely changing an identity of the police department to now this more, you have to go to community meetings. And there was reluctance. There was.
Oakland Police Captain Ricardo Orozco is a 26-year veteran of the force. He says when he first started, there was no emphasis on community engagement. But law enforcement in general was changing, and over time, so did OPD.
I can honestly say that I've seen the transformation of this police department, and I like meeting with the community. I like hearing the community. I like helping the community, and it just reinforced a lot of the things as to why you get into the policing to help.
Still, if it wanted to keep community policing officers, the city needed stable funding. So in 2004, Oaklanders passed Measure Y. It mandated a minimum of 739 officers and included funding for those community problem-solving officers. Not everything went smoothly. The program faced initial criticisms for poor management. A local attorney even sued the city for allegedly misusing the funds. But in 2008, the tide started to turn. Orozco remembers building trust with the Latino community around Fruitvale by posting a Spanish-speaking officer near the BART station who people could approach to report crimes.
I thought that was a success just because it was something that the merchants and the community asked for and we provided. And it was very beneficial on both parts because it broke down some barriers for the community and also for the officers involved.
Around the city, violent crime rates began dropping. But in 2010, Oakland faced a fiscal crisis and the council slashed the city budget. The city laid off 80 officers and cut other resources that supported community policing. And once again, crime rates began to spike. Over the next 2 years, murder rates jumped by almost 30%. Robberies went up 40%, and burglaries more than 50%. And those neighborhood councils found themselves taking on more public safety work. But many activists say communication and coordination has been an ongoing problem. West Oakland's Alex Miller Cole says he didn't even know the city had a community policing plan for many years after he began organizing his neighborhood.
I had to invent my own map, my own structure to do community policing when there were already all these things in place and nobody shared that with me.
There's a group that's supposed to do that sharing, the Community Police Advisory Board, or CPAB. It's charged to serve as a watchdog for the city's community policing efforts. But activists say it's been largely ineffective for the last 5 years. John Garvey is a board member and says part of the problem is police turnover.
But we've had five chiefs in the last 5 years, I think. So it's like it keeps changing. So it's very difficult to evaluate and make recommendations on something which you're not really clear what it is. So Anthony Batts, Chief Batts' version of community policing is really different than the one that we're seeing today.
Former Oakland Police Chief Anthony Batts promoted citizen partnerships with police to deal with the kind of social issues that drive crime rates up. But Batts also took officers off community policing beats so they could focus on violent crimes. As a result, there are fewer problem-solving officers on the neighborhood beats today. So what does community policing mean now? For some activists, it means having the police be directly accountable to the neighborhood councils, which many say represent the city's politically savvy homeowner base. For others, it means engaging with youth and building relationships with the communities that have traditionally distrusted the police. In other words, the people most likely to be arrested. Board member John Garvey says numerous plans and studies have looked at how to reduce crime, but it's hard to know what success looks like.
We have a lot of things, but we don't have a lot of metrics to measure how much of it we're getting and how effective it is. And we have a lot of good ideas. This is how much are we doing and how can we measure its effectiveness.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Marcus Johnson. I'm the chair of the Community Policing Advisory Board, and I would like to welcome all of you.
At a CPAB meeting this past spring, consultant Robert Wasserman rolled out a new plan for OPD. The city recently hired him and former police chief William Bratton to help overhaul their crime prevention strategies.
There are many police officers who want to see a real partnership with the community. We got to figure out how to get people in the neighborhoods to say, we're going to join and make a difference.
Wasserman then introduced a new geographic organization strategy. The police breaks down the two previous districts into five smaller areas and makes sure that beat officers stay in the neighborhood they're assigned.
Every district of the community will have a police captain in charge of the district and accountable for the quality of policing and the relationships with the community and the effectiveness of strategies that are being used.
I'm going to move to our year-to-date crime numbers. Our year-to-date crime numbers break down in this way. Murders are down 13%. Assaults with firearms are down 13%.
The plan launched in June. A few months in, the area captains report back to the City Council's Public Safety Committee on how the new strategy is working. Citywide, total crime numbers are flat compared to last year. Murders and burglaries are down, but robberies are up. OPD Captain Ricardo Orozco reports on his top two priorities, robberies and prostitution. He says he's got officers walking the beat who offer services to the women and mentions community partnerships he thinks are working.
One benefit that I've seen with the community is the Dear John letter writing campaign, where they are looking at license plate numbers, and then they're providing that information to us, and then we're sending letters out to the registered owners of those vehicles and basically telling them that they were seen in an area that is known for prostitution.
Everyone acknowledges that more needs to be done, but the mood is cautiously optimistic. In Oakland, I'm Kyungjin Lee for Cross Currents.
Coming up, we'll continue our look at California's criminal justice system by talking to a psychiatrist at San Quentin.
I always wore a white coat when I was in the prison, and specifically to identify me as medical staff and not custody staff. And the inmates aren't stupid. They know if you're there to try and be helpful in as a physician.
I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents because we're here in our fall membership campaign inviting you to become a member of KALW. We're not going to take any time out of the program. We're just going to remind you that you bring you Cross Currents and all of the programs you hear on KALW. KALW.org, support local community radio and no interruption membership drives, KALW.org. With me in studio today for this special hour-long edition of Cross Currents is Nancy Mullane. She's been reporting on California's criminal justice system for over 6 years now. And you've talked, Nancy, with a lot of the men in prison and followed them on their journeys out of prison, trying to make a life after being incarcerated, sometimes for decades. So what do you hear from people who get out on parole? What are some of the biggest challenges? What is it like?
Well, let's start with getting out on parole. So take Wall Street. If he were to get out, here's this individual who has spent his time in prison preparing the way for his future, reading, learning, believing that there's an alternative to crime. And the day he gets out of prison, if he were to get out, he would be put on a van at about 8:30 in the morning at San Quentin. He would be if he had someone at home who sent him clothes, he wouldn't have to buy sweats. If he has to buy sweats, then they would take out the money of his. And so they get $200 the day they leave prison. And if they have to buy the sweats so they're not wearing their prison outfit when they leave, that comes out of that $200. So they're put in a van. They're driven to the San Rafael bus station. The van door opens. They call their name. They hand them an envelope with $200 in denominations. And they're pointed to a bus that's idling that says Santa Rosa or San Francisco. And they point them to the bus. They run, get on the bus. The buses take off. And they begin their life on the outside of the prison walls after 5, 10, 20 years with $200 in cash. And that is it. And the interesting thing is this was the very first story that I ever did for KLW.
That's right. Yes, 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 yes.
Which began my prison reporting when Holly Kernan, sitting across from me right now, said, yeah, we want to know. Go do a story about what happens when people get out of prison. And it began this really incredible journey for me as a professional reporter, going in and discovering this world behind the walls.
And how challenging it is to survive outside of those walls, even if you've prepared yourself, because it's very difficult to reenter society to get a job if you have a criminal record, right?
Yeah, and my most recent report for KLW was on Proposition 36, the individuals who were serving three strikes who have now begun to get out on the Proposition 36 and what their lives were like. And that was another report for KLW. KLW has really led the way in the Bay Area and in the country with the kind of support for reporting about incarceration and prisons that everyone's starting to really take notice of today. But truly, Holly Kernan and KLW began watching this with interest and with devotion getting this information 6 years ago.
That is what we are mandated to do. That is public interest reporting, to do what may not be commercially viable, but that is very much in the vital public interest. And it's in the interest of public safety to understand these issues, to know who these men are and the challenges that they face. And if you care about that, you can actually support what we do. We're in our fall membership campaign, very short and sweet, 7 days. We're on day five, I think, today, maybe four or five, 800-525-9917. Nancy Mullane is joining me as my special guest. She started out as in criminal justice reporting at KLW. She's now the author of Life After Murder, an award-winning book, and she is the executive producer of Life of the Law, a new innovative podcast. And she got me into helping produce the SQPR radio project, the San Quentin Prison Report. If you want to support that kind of radio, give us a call at 800-525-9917. We have literally seconds to get 25 people to go to the phone or to the website.
And you know, those dollars that you commit today, those dollars are not, they don't just go into a big pot that nobody remembers. Oh, where did that go? They go to
programming,
paying for reporters to take that time to go back in and get these stories. And without that funding, that just won't happen.
1-800-525-9917. One more time, Nancy.
1-800-525-9917. That's
okay,
the number to call.
Diane Chandry to thank of San Francisco. Lori Shanzies. Thank you, Lori of San Francisco. Christopher White. Mandeep Gill. Edward Fernandez. Larry Stein. Trina Deal. And Susan in El Cerrito. Stephen Westwood from Burlingame. Thanks to all of you. Let's see, that looks like about 9 out of the 25 people that we need. KALW.
9 out of 25? That means we need more.
We need more. Nearly 50% of the way. 800-525-9917 is the number to call, or go to klw.org. You can do that while we go back to more stories on Cross Currents. Give out the number one more time, Nancy.
1-800-525-9917.
And we have a matching grant. I'll tell you about that in just a minute. So every dollar that you donate to this station is matched, and all of it goes to the programming. 800-525-9917, or go to klw.org. We have
thank you
gifts there, and we thank you here. And now let's go back to San Quentin for our next story. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Dr. O'Neill Dillon served as a psychiatrist at Solano and San Quentin State Prisons from 1994 to 2000. He's also president of the Northern California Psychiatric Society. During his time working in the prison's mental health facilities, he says intense overcrowding created an almost perpetual state of crisis. In this story produced by KALW's Leah Rose, Dr. Dillon recounts his days treating mentally ill prisoners and the challenges of practicing in a volatile and chaotic environment.
I never felt personally threatened in a prison setting. Plus, I always wore a white coat when I was in the prison, and specifically to identify me as medical staff and not custody staff. And the inmates aren't stupid. They know if you're there to try and be helpful as a physician. And, you know, if you respected them as human beings and treated them with dignity, you were seen as someone who was doing their job, and as if you're a helping professional, you're there to help them. Because it was hard to see individual patients in administrative segregation, because to have them escorted by two officers to your office, to see them in an office setting, even if it was in that building, took a lot of time. I decided I would go make house visits. So I walked the tiers and see inmates that I had already been seeing, but I'd also be looking for other cases, and I'd also find out a lot of what was happening. Some inmate would call me over and tell me about something else happening. So when you go on the tiers like that, you start at one end, you open the gate. The inmate in the cell next to the gate, his job is to identify who's coming on the tier. And his job is to communicate it all the way down the tier, to alert everybody. Someone's coming on the tier. So if it was a custody officer, the inmate would yell out, "Hot water! Hot water!" And it would go down the tier from cell to cell. "Hot water! Hot water!" When I came on the tier in my white coat, the inmate would yell, "Lukewarm water!" And that would go down the tier. You could, if an inmate did something positive, you could, as a staff, you could write up what was called a laudatory note that you would put in their record. And I would do that with inmates who pointed out an issue, a security issue. We had inmates who were trained in Vietnam for escape issues, and now they were in prison. And by God, these were professionally trained escape artists from the military. One guy pointed out to us in the infirmary all the security risks that he was noticing in the cell that he was in. And I thought that was a very helpful thing for him to do. So you write up a laudatory note and put it in his file. Had other inmates do things like... I lost a pen once in administrative segregation. An inmate found it. No, he traded cigarettes for it. And when I was walking the tiers one day, he called me over. He wasn't a patient. And he gave me my pen back that I had lost. And he informed me that this was one of those Parker pens with a big refill, huge refill in the Parker pen. They could be used as darts in a prison setting. Inmates can make blowguns out of newspapers. They can use that pen refill as a dart. And so he gave it to me back, and he said, "You shouldn't bring pens like this into a prison setting." I said, "Thank you. That's important information. I'm going to write up a laudatory note and put it in your file." So I was talking to the captain about that and said, "Geez, this guy, you know, did this." And the captain, he said, "Do you want to know why that inmate was here?" And I'm thinking, well, I usually don't want to know why the inmates are here. Well, he said, I said, "Yeah, all right, tell me." He said, "That inmate killed a doctor." Now, why is he getting my pen from another inmate, trading cigarettes for it, and giving it back to me? Is that hope? I don't know. It was an eye-opening experience. Saw many kinds of cases that I had never seen before. I also found that it was a very interesting setting in which to treat these character disordered and or seriously mentally ill patients, primarily because you could split the therapeutic function of the staff and the doctors from the control function of the custody staff. And you could use that difference in a therapeutic way. The need was overwhelming, and that the overcrowding, although the Department of Corrections was doing their best to try and get staff in there, and there was the psychiatric programs were being attempted to be staffed. The federal courts got it right. The overcrowding is what's been leading to the prison's problems. And so there was no way in the world you could feel that you had a situation, that you've stabilized a situation in an institution. There were cases that you couldn't get to. And that wears on you. It's seeing the pain of people that can't be addressed. Too many, not enough staff, can't address it.
That's Dr. O'Neill Dillon. He served as a psychiatrist at Solano and San Quentin State Prisons from 1994 to 2000. That piece was produced by KALW's Leah Rose. Coming up, we'll give you the answer to a special audiograph sound you've been hearing this past week.
Down on the yard.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan, and joining me today for this special hour-long edition of Cross Currents is reporter Nancy Mullane. She's my co-host, and we're talking about criminal justice and bringing you stories. We're also taking tiny bits of the program to remind you that this is a partnership, that we are in our fall membership campaign. You may not have noticed at all because we're only taking 30 seconds and 60 seconds, the natural breaks that occur, to remind you that we can't do this without you. Nancy, we are about 15 calls or clicks away from making our goal. We need to get to that number, KALW.org, or...
We need you to call 1-800-525-9917. This is a really important phone call that you're going to make today to support KALW and to support all the extraordinary support for reporting that KALW gives into the community every year. And this is a really important moment for you to say, I'm gaining from this, and I'd really like to support KALW today. KALW, 1-800-525-9917.
Or go online like Catherine Miles did, or maybe she called. She says, I love the San Quentin program tonight on Cross Currents, and that made me donate. It's a wonderful station. Whatever it is that makes you listen, let that be what makes you make a donation of whatever works for you. Lots of people donate $100. That's great. I frequently do $120. That's $10 a month.
So what's the minimum? I mean,
and
if
there is no minimum. There's no minimum.
Saying,
it's all about what you believe this is worth to you and what you can afford. KALW.org or 800-525-9917. We just heard from Dr. Dillon,
fascinating
a psychiatrist
report.
Inside of San Quentin, and he spoke about building different kinds of relationships with inmates and staff. And what did he say? They yelled lukewarm water when he came down. He said he made house visits, which meant walking the tiers for him.
Exactly.
And he says if you respected them as human beings and treated them with dignity, you wouldn't have a problem. That's what we're trying to do with our listeners here, is treat you with dignity and say, you know how this works. You make a donation, we are able to put all the programs you want on the air. KALW.org, whatever works for you. We're going back to more stories. And Nancy Mullane is going to regale us with more of her stories from her book, Life After Murder. But give us a call, 1-800-525-9917. Help us get to this magic number of 25. If we do, we will have some matched extra money for KALW, so your dollars will be doubled. Give us the number, Nancy, and then I will have you tell us a little more about your work.
1-800-525-9917. And, you know, one of the things that I was listening to the doctor, and he described this moment when he said there was hope. And, you know, that's one of the things that I've just been so impacted by and affected by over the 6 years that I've been reporting, is the tremendous amount of hope that exists inside the prison walls. And what I've really been able to see is when these men get out, they don't just leave that hope behind the walls. They bring that hope with them because when they do get out, it's a very difficult transition from being in an institutionalized environment.
And a lot of them have real missions to get out and serve their communities in some way.
Yeah, and many of them start, you know, when we talk about rehabilitation in prison, the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation for years has not had a significant rehabilitation program in its prisons. And so the men inside and women inside the prisons throughout California, 34 institutions, have formed their own organizations, like the San Quentin Prison Report, like Trust, like Impact, Incarcerated Men Putting Away Childish Things, and Teaching Responsibility Utilizing social Techniques, and the Prison University Project. These are all volunteer-based supportive organizations that these individuals learn how to come back.
So do you think that the tide is turning in some way, Nancy, that we're moving away from this kind of get tough, throw away the key mentality.
Well, we know that doesn't work. It doesn't work to throw away a key because then we end up paying $49,000, $50,000 a year with that person locked up in a cage, basically a very small cell. And what we're finding is when we do provide opportunity for them to get education, for them to have rehabilitative services, that they take that opportunity and it translates into successful lives on the outside.
And we're going to go next to our audiograph game. You've been hearing a sound, and maybe you're starting to get it. But Nancy talked about the cost that we pay. You pay for this radio station. It's KALW.org. We're just taking seconds to remind you that it's a bargain, and we really do need you to call or click if you want us to keep doing it this way, this no-interruption drive. Give us the number.
1-800-525-9917, or you can go online
to kalw.org. It doesn't matter what you donate. Donate $100 if you can. Donate $1,000 if you can. Every single donation counts. We're trying to get 25 people right now, 800-525-9917. As we go back to another story, this audiograph game, you can continue to click at kalw.org. You can support KALW by calling 525-9917. It's a toll-free 800 number. Or just go to kalw.org, look at the thank you gifts, they're all right there. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. For the past week on KALW, we've been playing you this sound.
$1 wall of a lie. $1 wall of a lie.
Strip down. Ting, ting,
ting, ting, ting, ting. Second tier, child time.
5 years of lockup.
Ding, ding, and by now you can probably guess where those sounds were recorded.
We are the San Quentin Prison Report Radio Project, and we're speaking to you from inside San Quentin State Prison.
Just to be clear, the SQPR reporters are currently serving time at San Quentin, and they aren't allowed to take their microphones out of their recording room and into the prison without special permission. So when KALW's Martina Castro visited them at San Quentin, she asked them to imitate the sounds of daily life there for today's audiograph.
Okay, so we're just going to talk about sounds of San Quentin.
This is the one recording I was able to make that day. I used a microphone the SQPR reporters had connected to one of their computers in their makeshift production studio. You know, for a lot of people, describing the sounds of where they live is hard. But these guys, they jumped right in.
Gar keys. Ching, ching, ching,
ching, ching, ching, ching. San Quentin's alarm.
They count everybody inside of the prison. It's counted at about 3:30, 4 o'clock. Ding, ding, ding. 13 to start, 3 to stop every day.
5 minutes to lock up.
And when does that happen?
About 9 o'clock.
5 minutes for child. Yeah, 5 down and 1 up, like for the tiers, because it's one of the 5 tiers. So they say start from the 5th tier down or from the 1st tier up.
So you're listening for your tier number.
This is for your tier number. So they say second tier, child time.
What else? What are some other sounds?
The showers.
You walk in the tiers. Cookies on the tier. Cookies.
Get
all on the line.
The
dude selling little bottles of oil for $1. The dude has a little rhythm. He says, $1 oil on the line. $1 oil on the line.
You can hear in the game, be like, 15. Fool out domino, fool domino with 25.
Down on the yard. So that means that a fight has occurred or something medical has occurred, so we have to get down.
These sounds are a big part of the regimented and repetitive life in there. Even the dreaded clanging of the old pipes, which often interrupt their recordings.
Clack, clack, clack. Clack, clack, clack. Clack, 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 clack.
But the best... The absolute best sound of San Quentin for June 21st, 2013 is Happy Birthday to you.
All of a sudden, the guys began to sing to radio producer Nigel Poor. She volunteers at San Quentin.
Happy birthday to you.
And then it was time to wrap things up. But one of the guys, Greg Eskridge, he had a question for me.
So when you go home right now, go out there to the world, one of your friends say, so how was it going to a prison?
Oh, I'm going to tell them it's just like, almost like regular life.
Almost. You know, part of me is embarrassed to hear myself say that. Clearly, prison life isn't normal. But there was something really comfortable and normal about how I felt right then. In this room full of men convicted of serious crimes, I never in a million years thought that possible. But there we were, and it felt almost like everyday life. The last sound I remember from my visit was the voice of one of the inmate reporters who said to me as we were exchanging goodbyes, "Don't let people out there forget about us. Tell them we are here paying for our crimes and we are still redeemable. Tell them we can be rehabilitated and return to the world better people."
Usually with Audiograph, a lot of you call in to tell us what you think the week's mystery sound was and where we recorded it. But this week we didn't get any guesses. That was a hard one, we know it, and that's okay. Part of what Audiograph does is take you to places you may never have been in the Bay Area and tell you a little more about those places and the people who live there. It's a way of connecting the dots in this very big and diverse place we call home. To hear more from Audiograph, you can go to our website, kalw.org, and that's also where you can become a member of KALW. We're in the middle of our very short but very important membership campaign. At kalw.org, you can click and donate now, or you can call us. We'll give the number in just a moment. That Audiograph was produced by inmates at San Quentin as part of KALW's collaboration with SQPR to bring you stories from inside of prison walls produced by the men in blue themselves. And that kind of innovation only comes from a station like KALW with the freedom to say yes. I'm Holly Kernan here with Nancy Mullane. She is the author of Life After Murder. She is the executive producer of Life of the Law. And we've been really looking at criminal justice in the prison system. It's pretty amazing to hear from these men, the joy, the sorrow, all of this, and what you heard Greg say, don't let them forget us.
And how often do you actually hear inmates in a prison laughing and singing happy birthday for a volunteer? I mean, this kind of environment, this kind of situation happens inside San Quentin daily. They laugh. They have relationships. They talk to each other. They have...
These are full-bodied human beings that we mostly don't know anything about.
And where else would you hear that but on KALW? You know, in the San Quentin Prison Report, it came to me through Nigel Poor, who's a volunteer at San Quentin. And she said, you know, the men want to do radio. You know, I've been going in and interviewing them, and they thought, well, we can do it too. And so it began with an idea. And I said, well, you have to talk to Holly Kernan, of course, at KALW. And that's how it happened.
And they are making amazing radio. We're going to be bringing it to you every Monday at 5 o'clock here on Cross Currents.
But that just goes to show you what KALW can do with the kind of leadership with Holly Kernan.
All right, enough about me. Let's talk about the listeners. Let's talk
you.
About the listeners, because Nancy, we have 2 minutes only to get about 10 more people to go to the phones. 1-800-525.
San Quentin Prison Report. Call 1-800-525-9917. Let these men know that you do want to hear their reports from inside San Quentin. You want to hear the stories they need to tell. That's not a reporter going in, such as myself, but reporters inside telling their own stories.
In their
it's
own voices. It's powerful. It's important. It
it's
matters.
It's the only prison report by inmates in the country. There is no other collaborative relationship between a prison and a public radio
and
station.
And we treat
on
these
outside.
Guys like reporters in the same way that we treat Nancy when she's doing a piece. That's how we're working with these men inside of San Quentin and their wonderful volunteer producer, Nigel Poor. Thank you to Nigel. But but we have, Nancy, we need to get these phones ringing.
1-800-525-9917.
Let me give it out again. 1-800-525-9917. We need 10 more calls or clicks right now to make this goal, and
be
we can do
one.
It because you support this community radio station, like Michelle Prager. She says, because it's informative and it covers topics mainstream media does not. 1-800-525-9917.
Call now. This is the moment right now to tell the San Quentin Prison Report that these men are doing these reports and that you respect the work that they're doing. They are trying to do good things. They're trying to show that they have changed, that they are producing something of value.
And if you believe in that kind of value, go to kalw.org. You choose the amount. It's up to you. This is about respect, as Nancy said. We respect you. We are not interrupting our programming, only using these little breaks that occur naturally. Join Ellen Baum of Oakland, of the East Bay, who said, a wonderful ray of hope in a world going through agonizing transition.
Transition. You know, and what we're learning now is that locking people up and throwing away the key, as we talked about earlier, doesn't get anyone where we really need to go as a society. But when we go inside the walls and we find out what does work, what creates the kind of change that we as a society want, and then we report that, and these individuals from the San Quentin
Prison
Report,
we've got to get 10 more people in 30 seconds.
Call 1-800-525-9917. Do it for the San Quentin Prison Report. Do it for these men who are telling you their stories.
Do it for yourself, because you are listening, and because this is your community radio station, and because you want to vote for these no interruption drives, like Jeffrey Kessler, like Lisa Berndt, who said, love this program about prisons and 99% invisible. Go to kalw.org.
And thank you to all the people over the years, the 6 years that I've been reporting for KALW. Thank you for reporting the work that I've been able to do through KALW. Thank you for those who are listening right now, who are going to their phones, going to the internet, and giving to KALW.
And thank you to everybody who's donating right now. Nancy, it looks like it's happening. We might need three more calls.
Three more.
KALW.org. You're listening to KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco. I'm Holly Kernan.
Thank you.